Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Let's get back to our Dog Days of Summer book series. This hour, we explore the complicated and sometimes comical relationships that people can have with their dogs and how they impact their human relationships. Here's my conversation from last summer with Maria Navarro about the dog days of a new marriage. Even before you read one line of Mia Navarro's new memoir, you get a sense of where things went awry. It's the photo of Eddie. Snout lifted, ears back, a certain expression in his eyes. It's really more than mischief. I think it looks like downright devilry. So when she writes in the introduction, "Love blinded me to the conniving manipulator behind the wagging tail," you already have a sense of what Mia Navarro is talking about. She's a journalist of the New York Times. Her new memoir is titled Stepdog, and she joins us today from New York. And Mia, welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Thank you, Carrie.
I have to issue a disclaimer here right off the top that's probably going to affect the interview. I love dogs, and I will always side with the dog, Mia. So I don't know how this is going to go.
But so do I. So do I. I've always had dogs. You know, I grew up with dogs. And as an adult, I didn't just because I couldn't deal with the responsibility, but just because mostly of my work. But a lot of my friends have dogs. I've never had issues with any dogs. I've never been bitten by a dog, and I'm certainly not a cat person. This was just one very particular dog that made my life miserable.
And I think the picture that you've put on the cover of the book and that you've put inside, tell us, if you know dogs and you love dogs, boy, is that revealing. What do you think? What do you think of my theory about that?
I am so grateful that you see it the way I see it. Because, you know, certainly a lot of my friends did not sympathize at all. And I remember one of them asked me to go to therapy with the dog. Because obviously I had a problem, not the dog. But, I think, people forget that, dogs have their own personalities, and they're not all these benign creatures capable of only unconditional love. And they're very capable of jealousies. And in this case, he was very loyal to, you know, my future husband. And he made it very clear that I was the intruder, even though my husband got him exactly 4 months before we met. So it wasn't like Eddie, you know, had a jump start, you know, of years ahead of me. But he did make me feel like I was absolutely intruding.
You know, what really becomes clear in the early pages of the memoir is that he somehow knows how to hide his devilry. I mean, he knows when to behave in one way when he's around your husband and how to behave in one way when he's around you. That's pretty extraordinary.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I learned that, at least Eddie is just very good at looking after his own self-interest, even though I have to tell you, and my husband agrees, so it's not just my biased opinion, he's not the smartest of dogs. I mean, I've met dogs that are much smarter than Eddie. But Eddie, had this uncanny, talent to look after his self-interest. So, for example, when Jim traveled and it was just Eddie and me, he absolutely behaved like a normal pet. And the minute Jim walked in, you know, after his trip, he would resume hostilities.
I mean, it's like Eddie knew that when he was just alone with you, who was going to be feeding him, who was going to be the prime caregiver, and that he couldn't misbehave. I mean, this is almost like child behavior, isn't it?
It is. It is. And I mean, I think I never expected the pet to make it harder, you know, for me to blend in, right? Because you come into this instant family. My husband had two kids. They were twins, and there were challenges there. And certainly, I focused on the dog because I couldn't focus on the kids as much as I could focus on the dog because the kids had two very responsible, involved parents, right? So, you know, you come in thinking, what am I going to be? The teacher, the mentor, the friend? You know, what is a stepmom? And I think the answer is different in each circumstance. And, you know, in my case, I was kind of a hands-off stepmom because the parents were so involved. But, you know, in many ways, I think Eddie reflected issues in the family, right, when you're trying to get all these personalities to get along, right, and deal with emotional issues. And he wasn't subtle about it. I mean, the worst thing for me was the lack of affection that, I mean, if I couldn't win over the dog, what kind of loser was I, you know?
So when
he barked at me on sight, whether, you know, I was getting up in the morning or coming in after work into the house, I mean, he was absolutely hostile and barked at me as if I were the mail carrier. So on good days, I ignored him. But on bad days, I really want him to disappear.
I just know that there are listeners right now who have run into, you know, have had animals that really affected their relationship. So let me do this. If you've just tuned in to the conversation, Mia Navarro is with us. She's written this charming memoir called Stepdog about what it was like to, you know, come into a second marriage for her husband, not her. He already had children, and he, as she has said, had this dog that seems like he took an immediate dislike to Mia, although he knew when and how to behave at certain times. And as I read this, I was thinking, I had a cat who really got in the middle of some of my early relationships. And if you're listening in and you've had an experience with this, I'd love to know about it. Dog or cat or some kind of animal that got into the middle of the relationship. Tell me a short story about what happened and how you resolved it. And you can talk to me about it on Twitter, which is probably a great way where you can, maybe you'll send me a photo of the dog or cat or animal that got into the middle of your relationship. It's at Kerrie, KerriMPR. I want to take a little bit of background here, Mia. You are a New York Times journalist. Your then fiance, husband now, was also a Times journalist, right? He'd been married, and as you say, he had tween-aged kids. So tell me how this all comes together.
So basically, he was based in Los Angeles, and I was based in New York. And we met in Phoenix, of all places, just because I was there for a conference, and he was there for a story. And then we basically had a long-distance relationship of a couple of years, and I ended up moving to L.A. because at the time that Jim was called back to New York, he really couldn't leave L.A. because his kids were too young. So he then quit the Times and got another job. And so I was the one who moved into their home. Now, we ended up getting our own place, but that really didn't change matters, except that I became a little bit more assertive with the dog. But, you know, the first time I came into Jim's townhouse and stayed over, the dog peed outside our bedroom door. And Jim goes, "Oh, he's never done that." And I was like, "Oh, well, yeah, great mystery." And, you know, so he made his feelings known from the get-go. And then, you know, I could tell that, you know, the dog had the run of the house. I mean, he even licked the dishes in the dirty, you know, the dirty dishes in the dishwasher while, you know, Jim was putting them in the dishwasher. And I was like, oh, my God, no. And, you know, he could be on sofas, and he slept with the kids in their beds. And so when we moved in together, we got our own place, I kind of set down some rules. And I have to say that I don't blame the dog 100%, because I think part of the problem here was also that Jim and I had very different parenting styles.
Yeah.
I come from a Puerto Rican family, and, you know, Latin families tend to have kind of an authoritarian type of, you know, style. of parenting, and Jim was more free form. You know, he was, you know, always seeking understanding for bad behavior, and I was always like, just basically, you know, you do this and you're dead. You know, that was my approach. So I did try to lay down the law with Eddie, not as much with the kids, but you know, the problem was I was the only one with a problem with the dog.
Right,
so
right.
There was no consistent, you know, approach
right,
to the dog.
Which isolates you from the beginning. So we're getting a lot of calls here, Mia, from people
who
have experienced this. So you're in good company. To Vanessa in Woodbury. Hey, Vanessa, tell me the story.
Hi.
What's the story?
I had a wonderful cat, and she was very well behaved. But when I started dating my boyfriend, she would seek out all of his clothes and shoes just to pee in them.
It's total jealousy. I had a cat
Absolutely.
Who did. Yeah, Vanessa, I had a cat who did the exact same things. He would chew and scratch all my boyfriend's clothes.
Yeah, it's so much jealousy. We would put all of his stuff in the closets and close it away, and she would find ways to get in those rooms just to pee on his stuff.
What'd you do about it? How'd you fix it?
Well, we tried all the different things, medicines and stuff to try to discourage it. And eventually we gave her to one of my friends. So I still see her, but she hates my boyfriend.
Oh my gosh, still. Still, that's so weird.
Years later, yep.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Vanessa. Mia, you did things to try to, I mean, you walked Eddie, you fed him treats. It isn't like you weren't trying to lure him, you know, to be more affectionate with you, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, I did. And that was kind of what was so disappointing, you know, that he would just absolutely forget our, you know, quality time together, so to speak. You know, I watched the dog whisperer because I felt, you know, discipline was the key here. But I have to tell you, I think I was totally mistaken, because it's really about emotions, and it's really ultimately about acceptance, right? And I think, you know, it wasn't until I talked to an animal behaviorist many years later that, you know, she explained he sees you as a competitor for resources, not necessarily for food, but for certainly for attention and for his master's, you know, love. So you have to become a dispenser of resources. And the way I did it was to, I became the exclusive feeder. Like I would be the one feeding him all the time. And he became a little bit better. You know, he basically barked at me, you know, maybe 20% of the time as opposed to all the time. He never wavered in his loyalty, and he, you know, I have to say he became, he's still with us. He's almost 15 years old. So only senility, I think, on his part, not mine, has improved the relationship, because I think he forgets that he doesn't like me. So he's sweet to me now.
Ah, okay. So age has mellowed Eddie, finally.
Absolutely.
I want to read a description of Mia's, of her, what she writes about what Eddie looked like, because this is so cute. You say, Eddie was covered in dark spots, interrupted by a wide brown saddle wrapped around his muscular back and rump. Any of his victims could easily pick him out in a lineup. What kind of a breed is he again? Remind me.
Well, he's a mutt, basically. And I think Jim thinks that he has blue heeler in him,
he
which is like
looks
an Australian
like it.
Cattle dog.
He looks like it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because of his looks, he stops traffic, literally. I mean, when I walk him, I've had cars stop and ask, oh, what's that? You know, is that a pit bull? Is that this, a boxer? And, you know, how crazy people are about dogs. And certainly, you know, it's been funny to get reactions from readers of the book because, you know, it's so funny. You're asking for examples. And I heard from a friend who said, her roommate's pet in college was a ferret, and that ferret was jealous.
Oh,
and
boy.
The way the ferret showed the jealousy was by crapping in her shoes and not the roommate's.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, ferrets. I wouldn't want to mess with a ferret that didn't like me. We've got more callers on the line. Let me go to Mark in Minneapolis. Hey, Mark, what's your story?
Well, I have a Italian Greyhound, and he's a very affectionate dog. He, if someone new comes into the house, he always comes up to them and greets them. But my best friend, anytime he came over to the house, the dog would run to the other end of the house and hide behind a chair.
Really?
So it was kind of the opposite of him being aggressive or something. He just was in fear of him. And my friend felt so bad because he didn't know what he had done to make the dog fear him so much. And, you know, he's never been alone with him as far as I know, so I'm pretty sure he didn't abuse him or anything. But it was a long time, and my friend didn't want to come over to my house anymore because he didn't want to panic the dog.
Oh, and wow.
So eventually I had him come over, and I held the dog in my arms and let him smell and pet him and do let him know that he's his friend. He was still skittish, and it's taken a while, but now he will be in the same room with him.
Yeah, isn't that odd? Did you have your dog from when he was a puppy?
Yeah.
So you know that it isn't some history of somebody that looks like your friend, you know, abusing him or anything like that. That's odd, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know if it was like some cologne he's wearing or something that the dog didn't like or what, but you know, it was just very unusual because he would my friend would reach out to him, you know, and to let him sniff his hand and stuff, and the dog would just run away.
Oh, yeah. You start to get a complex about that, don't you, after a while? Mark, thanks for the call to Scott in Minneapolis. Scott, what's your story about this?
Actually, it's funny. I'm the opposite of that. Like, every time I walk into a house, the dog is just on me. And
somebody else's dog, not yours?
Yeah, I've had people like, be careful, a dog doesn't like new people, and then the dog's just jumping on me and licking my face and just demanding all these. So anyway, I had this, an ex-girlfriend whose roommate had a dog, and it was this big Rottweiler, and the dog took an instant shine to me. I think it's because I played with it rough, because the two girls didn't really, you know, roughhouse with it enough. They walked it, and, you know, they had a lot of, they spent time with it, but they didn't really play wrestle with it. And but the dog took such a liking to me that he tried to come between me and my girlfriend. And he would like jump up in bed with us and wedge himself in between us.
Really?
Now keep in mind, this is a massive Rottweiler, you know. He would jump up in the bed in the middle of the night, wedge between us, and then just start kind of pushing her off the bed.
Wow.
And so we do this every night.
What ultimately happened with, I think you said your ex-girlfriend, didn't you?
Yeah, we're not, you know, we went out for a few months, but it was just really, you know, maybe about 6 or 9 months or something, but it was
there's something about you, Scott, that the dogs love, and I think that's a great quality to have, so thanks for the
I'm
call.
Okay with it.
Yeah. Mia, you write in the memoir, "I knew I walked a fine line with Eddie. Jim adored his buddy. His relationship with Eddie was a search for meaning, understanding, insights. It was as if he were the dog." Well, that immediately endeared Jim to me. But what do you mean when you say that Jim felt like he was the dog?
Well, I mean, he just basically, you know, it was like if the dog was barking, you know, my reaction would be, "Shut up, Eddie," because, you know, it was always an imaginary fly. I mean, there was no obvious reason why he was barking. And Jim would just like say stuff like, "Thank you, Eddie, for protecting us." You know, he just, you know, his dog was a noble, noble creature. But, you know, I think regarding the last caller, I it reminded me that one of my rules was not to allow Eddie in our bedroom for that very same reason. I mean, I felt that, you know, I had to kind of become a little bit more alpha, because I deep down, you know, feared that he was capable of biting me. And at the time, I had read that story about the French woman who had the first facial, implant, right?
Yes,
replacement,
transplant,
and,
right?
And it was I think it was her own dog that, you know, ate her face while she was sleeping. So it was like, I don't want this dog, this hostile dog, in our bedroom. So that, and he learned not to even come in, even when the door was open. So, you know, I have to tell you that, you know, the dog did endear me more to Jim, because I think I even though I complained, I he kind of revealed that tenderness, you know,
yeah.
And I just felt, you know, that I love my husband more because he loved the dog so much.
I know.
Much.
I totally understand that. The Adventures of Eddie. We're listening to my conversation from last summer with Maria Navarro about her memoir, Stepdog. It's part of our Dog Days of Summer book series. Back to it in just a minute. Phil Picardi now with the latest news. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Carrie. More than 500 passengers are being evacuated from a ship that caught fire about a mile off of Puerto Rico. The fire on the Caribbean Fantasy is part cruise ship and part ferry. Several dozen people were carried off on stretchers and were being treated for dehydration and shock. The Red Cross says more than 1,000 disaster volunteers have been mobilized from all 50 states to help with flood relief efforts in Louisiana. Flooding has killed 11 people and damaged at least 40,000 homes in the southern part of the state. And as water levels recede, areas downstream are becoming flooded as well. A prominent Donald Trump supporter says the latest Trump campaign staff shakeup is about ensuring good management for a campaign that is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Rudy Giuliani was interviewed on Fox News about the decision to put two conservative strategists in top campaign spots. Campaign chairman Paul Manafort will retain his title with the Trump campaign. A government report shows many commuter and freight railroads have made little progress installing safety technology designed to prevent deadly collisions and derailments. The technology uses radio communications, GPS, and signals located alongside the tracks to monitor trains and automatically slow or stop trains in danger of crashing. Congress mandated use of the technology back in 2008. And the American 5,000-meter runner who stopped to help a fallen competitor back to her feet will not be running in the final. Abby DiAgostino tore a ligament in her knee, and she will not be able to compete in the final. She finished Tuesday's race after helping a New Zealand runner and urging her to finish. The two clipped heels during the race and tumbled to the ground. More news ahead on NPR News. The time now is 10:41.
I'm Tom Weber. Next hour on NPR News, how the Warren Burger Court of the 1970s shaped today's conversations about crime and race and police. Then we'll get an update on all the legalities surrounding Prince's vast estate. I hope you'll join us at 11.
Programming is supported by the Midwest Home Luxury Remodeling Tour, showcasing one-of-a-kind remodeling projects around the Twin Cities. Last weekend to tour luxury remodeling projects. Tickets at Kowalski's Market and Mingle Studio M. Details at luxremodelingtour.com.
Hey, you can also get your tickets for our big event with Jeffrey Toobin. He has a new book out about Patty Hearst and the 70s counterculture, and there's some really interesting ties to Minnesota. Tickets are free now. We've moved the event to the Westminster Town Hall Forum. Boy, we're excited about that. It is September 28th. Lots of room for everyone, and I hope to see you there. There are details on the thread, but this will be a great conversation. We'll talk about the book. We'll also talk about politics, because Jeff Toobin comments on that on CNN all the time and has really great insight. So that event is September 28th, now moved to the Westminster Town Hall Forum. Really excited to be there, and I hope you'll be there too. Back to the conversation now from last summer with Mira Navarro about her memoir, Stepdog. It's part of our Dog Days of Summer, where we've done a series of conversations about dogs and books. The star of this story is Eddie the dog. Navarro told me she was often having to choose sides between Eddie and her husband, and it was usually Eddie who won out.
He just basically would tell me, you know, just ignore him. He's just a dog. That was his favorite phrase. He's just a dog. But as I said, I mean, this is the kind of tension and stress that when it's kind of, day in and day out, it does take a toll. And I have to say, you know, I admit that I did try to get rid of the dog. And the Times transferred me to New York. Jim followed a year later because the kids were off to college and boarding school. And so I, you know, kept suggesting that Eddie would be miserable in New York because of the winters and the hot weather. And, you know, L.A. has perfect weather. And Eddie's a California dog. And, you know, we had friends who could keep the dog, just like, you know, your caller, the cat woman is mentioned, you know, the friends would be happy to take Eddie. But Jim did not budge. And then when we had temporary quarters in New York at first, and we had to kennel Eddie for a few months. Oh, my God, those reunions at the kennel on weekends. Oh, my God. Casablanca, you know, it's like you just could not believe those farewells, you know,
really?
Between dog and master.
Oh, so then you realized I can't split these two up, right?
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
To the phones to Lorianne from Canada. Hey, hi, what's your story?
Hi, I actually had a horse when I was in high school that absolutely hated my high school boyfriend. When I first got him, I took my boyfriend out to show him, and he threw his head up in the air and reared and chased him and tried to bite him.
Oh, my gosh, really?
Yeah, he wouldn't let him go anywhere near me. He used to run in between us and just try to keep my boyfriend away from me, like he was herding cattle or something.
Wow.
And, he absolutely hated him.
How'd you resolve it?
We actually got another horse that he could ride so that he could go with me.
It's funny because I'm seeing a trend here. Choosing the man, not the animal.
Well, I never would have gotten rid of my horse.
Good to have the call, Lorianne. Thank you. To Sally in Osseo. Hey, Sally, what's your story?
I'm pulled over because I would never call on one of these shows, but when your guest, Ms. Navarro, said, what kind of a loser would I be if I couldn't make the dog love me? Let me tell you my story. So I feel your pain, and you'll see why in just a moment. Dated a guy many, many years ago, good-looking, well-educated, great guy, and I thought, yeah, I'd spend the rest of my life with him. But he had a dog, and this dog didn't like me. And you know how people always say, well, you know, dogs? No. So we started getting serious. Long story short, I gave him an ultimatum. Keep the dog, and I'm gone. Well, he chose the dog.
Oh, my gosh. It came to an ultimatum. I can't believe it. You could never win over the dog, Sally?
No. And, in fact, this dog tried to bite me, and I was afraid, as your guest said, that this dog would ultimately hurt me. Well, here's the best part of the story. You just have no idea the pain and embarrassment about being thrown over for a dog. Well, about 6-7 months afterwards, this former boyfriend started dating somebody else, and the dog loved her. So I felt really bad.
I guess.
Well, the marriage lasted 18 months. They were divorced. But this woman not only divorced him, she stole all of his money and stole his car and left him with a dog. So I'm sorry. Normally I wouldn't tell personal stuff on the radio.
I love it.
I feel your pen.
Oh my gosh.
I will read your book, and thank you so much for writing it.
Sally, you've made the show. That is an amazing story. See, Mia, it could have gone so much worse. Right?
Well, Sally, that's what I call a happy ending.
I know. Jeez.
You know, I have to say, Carrie, I never gave Jim an ultimatum mostly because it didn't get to be that bad, right? I felt that I could, you know, manage. But I have to say, it's a sign of true love when you put up with this,
you know.
And because it just makes a difficult situation even more difficult because you're already juggling, you know, I mean, my case, a new city, a new job, even though with the same company, then, you know, new husband,
right,
two stepkids, and you don't really need a dog to make things harder than they already are. And so I feel that we should get credit for sticking by, you know, the pet owner. But I do see Sally's situation, and I just find that, I just always felt that it I could suggest getting rid of Eddie, but I could never impose that on Jim.
Well, you were totally committed to making this marriage work. And you knew there were going to be complexities when you went into it. Again, this is Jim's second marriage. He has children. Do you think you transferred some of your, you know, uncertainty and angst about winning the kids over to Eddie, to this situation with Eddie?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because, you know, in a way, You know, I had been single for a long time. I was in charge of my life. And you come in thinking, oh, you know what? I'm going to make everybody's lives better. Right. They're going to be so happy, you know, with me in their lives, telling them what to do. You know, it was very unrealistic of me to think that I would have the same power I had as a single woman, you know, and certainly with the kids, you know, there was just no way I could dictate anything, you know, because they had their parents involved. So I just felt that in a way, you know, Eddie was a little bit of a scapegoat, but he was absolutely also, you know, part of this dynamic of making me feel like I had a lot of work to do to be accepted.
Yeah, and, I mean, Eddie bears some responsibility, Mia, no question. Yeah. But it's nice that you're taking on some of this, too. Let's hear from Christine and Edina. Hey, Christine, what's your story on this?
Hi there. Hey. So I was listening, and it's funny to hear about all these dogs and the way they get in between relationships. But I wanted to say I had kind of more the role of the dog. And so basically, when I entered in a relationship with my boyfriend, he and his dog had already had a relationship for many years before. And so I was kind of the one that was jealous in between trying to win his attention because his dog is just like the king of everything. And the more we started to date, I started noticing when he was spending time with the dog, he would call him and say to him like the same sweet kind of lovey things that he would say to me. And so I felt like I was the one that was trying to compete for the attention for him because the dog just, you know, it's a dog. It'll love endlessly, but it doesn't talk back and it doesn't fight. And
Christine, I mean, he was using the same little endearments to the dog that he would use. See, I make sure that I never say to I love my dog. I never use the same endearments to my husband that use to my dog. I think that might be a bridge too far.
Well, I remember one time I was sitting on the couch, and it's a big couch, and the dog just kind of looked at me like, ugh, like, move over. And I was like, no way, you move over. And then my boyfriend came by, and he's like, well, you're in his spot. And I was like, oh, it's for humans, okay? Don't tell me that I'd move over for him.
Okay.
And he totally ran the house.
What's happened with this, Christine? Are you still with the boyfriend?
Well, unfortunately, I am still with him, but the dog passed away.
Oh.
And so that was like a whole another bridge to cross.
Of course, because your boyfriend was grieving.
And the dog got along just fine. Yeah, we got along. And it was a family dog. It was a dog they had since they were growing up. And so it was a really hard time, and I helped him definitely get through that. But while he was alive, I mean, he was a great dog. We got along just fine, but it was just those little moments. I could hear him talking to him, and I was like, that's what he says to me.
I'm so glad you called. I love it. It's great. You know, so Mia, I mean, it seems like, because you say at one point in the book, the seasons change, but my husband still wears rose-tinted glasses, and Eddie is still Eddie. I mean, you've done most of the adjusting here. Is that fair to say?
Well, I think so. I mean, I think that I, just because, you know, I have to say, Jim was never an unreasonable dog owner. I mean, he wasn't one to have the dog vet, you know, me, or, you know, he didn't insist that the dog, you know, walk down the aisle with me, or, you know, nothing
well,
like that, right? I mean, you know, he wasn't crazy. but there was so much energy he wanted to spend on this stuff. So even little things like when I watch the dog whisperer, you know, Cesar Millan talks about American dog owners letting the dogs walk in front of them. And he feels that the dog should be healing, you know, walking right next to the owner. So I try to teach Eddie that when I walked him. But when I tried Jim to do it, Jim basically would say, no, you know, I want him to be a happy guy. You know, that's his nature. So there was no consistency in any training that I attempted.
Oh,
and therefore, the dog, you know, Eddie never learned much. And I felt that, you know, Jim could have been a little bit more cooperative. But in the end, you know, it is just a dog. I mean, you know, I do feel that I still feel that he's a pet and not, you know, like a child or a member of the family like a child would. But I do feel that I value now his role in the family. And I think it's that connector, you know, that even, you know, when things were tense among members of the family and we were at the dinner table, Eddie was always a safe subject to talk about, right? His dramas and his disgusting habits and stuff like that. And he brought, you know, he brought humor into our lives. And clearly. and I do appreciate the dog for that. I do.
That's Mia Navarro. Her memoir is called Step Dog. We talked last summer. We're listening back to it today because it's part of our Dog Days of Summer book series. You can find all the shows I do, but the dog-themed book shows as well, featured at nprnews.org/thread, and you can find them on my podcast. Just search NPR News with Carrie Miller in iTunes.